Dan, thanks for a wonderful venue again, Orphans 5. Thanks to Sam for having a wonderful father. It's been quite a special journey for myself and everyone at Color Lab to work on his film and come to know him through his film. I think we'd like to add another descriptor to Ray's list, and that would be humanitarian. In talking about Julian Bryan. Special thanks to Ray also for making me cut my film samples down from 3 hours and 42 minutes to 15 minutes. The Julian Bryan pre- and post-war Germany and Poland collection that the Holocaust Museum purchased consists of 120 rolls, mostly are between 1,500 to 1,900 feet of reconstituted camera negative. And that would be when some hapless soul in the form of an assistant editor or assistant to the negative cutter cleans up the editing room or the matching room and builds rolls of negative to go back into storage. These would contain shots, of course, that were not used in the production. So it also explains why, if the housekeeping wasn't too tightly organized, that we suddenly have on the same roll of film outtakes from Austria and then suddenly Manchuria back to back. The images are just as stunning, of course, from both, but there's not a lot of rhyme or reason sometimes to how they're put back together for storage. The collection is about 120 rolls again. It's nitrate camera original. Negative, black and white negative. There's some positive. I guess total adds up to 200,000 feet plus. There were 12 rolls that were compromised in this collection because of improper storage with stage 3 decomposition, which means a chemical reaction is going on between the nitrate, which must be stored in an outgassing environment. Gases must be able to escape. And when they don't, and there's a squishing of the camera negative up against the can, and the can begins to rust because of other reasons, there's a chemical reaction that begins. And this generally winds up, in 1 to 4 stages of decomposition, which is the degradation of the film emulsion and base, and the film becomes sealed shut. The decomposition on these rolls was active. Human nature being what it is, we just presumed that the rolls that we couldn't unwind and see were, in fact, the most important rolls of the collection. And therefore, we were pressed into action to get clever and come up with a way to unwind these rolls to see if they were worth preserving or not. And we did. I'm going to go into some illustrations on the general condition of the collection, and because of time constraints, then we will talk about the nuts and bolts of the treatment that we came up with while we're running the film samples. So this was a characteristic can that we found the film in, and as you can see, the rust has already developed on the film, and there's evidence of the film of the can being compromised physically. It's been jammed up against walls and stacked high, and the film inside, of course, has suffered the consequence of being jammed up against the metal, and therefore this chemical reaction has started. This is loosely known as the Band-Aid approach to stewardship. The most widely used rolls for stock footage over the years, of course, were the rolls that are predictable as to their physical status. Attempts were made to stop the progress of decomposition build up by adding carnation tape over the rust instead of just putting. This is a Kodak stock can, which everyone has and they're free. Putting it in a new can. So this is roll 2118, and this is a little story about this roll that we'll see the illustrations on. This is one of the rolls that wasn't widely used. A lot of stock footage was not sold from this roll, primarily because it was sealed shut, and of course this is why it was of such interest to everyone. And this is an example of of the mirror image of the degradation is completely traceable to this imagery on the can. And there we have an exact pattern of what we saw on the bottom of the can, and of course the same is true in the top of the can. This is known as active decomposition. When we shine lights on these and photograph them, our time is limited because they start bubbling. And as you can see toward the very outside of the roll, the areas closest to the edge of the cans is where the most decomposition happens, and of course the reel then becomes sealed shut. The areas between the most affected zones here and here and then here and here, of course, contain footage that's completely okay. And so the idea was to excise the problem areas to get to the footage that was salvageable. And with that concept, we came up with a way to do this. So again, here's a close-up of the bubbles. We turn the lights off, the bubbling would stop. We put the can away and get it out the next day, it would be a little bit more advanced. Time was of the essence. This is roll 2118. This is how the film looked on the portions that were okay. This is a lot of mold built up, which can be easily taken off with just some pretty elementary lab tricks. Here's a close-up of the an actual squishing site and the resultant damage that was caused by the film being jammed up against the metal. Of course, if a proper archival procedures were followed, it wouldn't be in a metal can at all, which is how it's housed now, but no one was thinking about that back then. Here's an example of a close-up of that exact piece of decomposition, and it's important to note that, you know, the roll is sealed shut, no one can figure out how to get it unwound, people want to see what it is, but in fact it's just this little area on the very outside that's disabling us from seeing what's on the rest of the roll. So we were able to save the wrap of all the picture except for that one little place which we excised. So we'll see little things of windows, like the scene will last as long as this wrap is long. And this is roll 2118 again, after the decomposition has been cosmetically removed on both sides. Cans put away, in a day we get the can out and all the bubbles and the schmutz that, you know, like little volcanoes, is back on it. So it's a very live, organic, and
is that stage 3
schmutz? This is stage 3 schmutz. All right, and so before we treated it, you know, we cosmetically cleaned it a couple times, and it would always come back. So, and this is before we even tried to unravel it. And so we developed the thing, and it works, and this is the resultant roll after treatment. We were then able to make a liquid gate contact. Even the shrinkage was not very bad at all. Answer print, which we'll be screening. So we got permission from the museum to keep this at room temperature just to see what would happen as far as you know, archives that don't have cold storage or deep cold storage. What is the reality of fixing one of these rolls and then putting it back in the storage but not freezing it? And after a year and a half of constantly worrying about it and evaluating it, we see that some of the decomposition did come back. We retreated it. We never lost any more frames. And now we're putting it into deep storage and deep, you know, freeze and seeing what happens. So it's not a temporary fix, but we think it's a permanent fix. The roll at that point was chemically neutral. There was nothing growing on it, and for 18 months it was dormant, and then it started growing again. So here's every wrap that happens. We have what closely resembles the optical effect of a curtain in and curtain out, and this is every strand leading up to the part of the shot that was excised completely and lost because the decomposition had eaten through the emulsion and even down into the base, and oftentimes would just leave a hole in the base. This is the very last wrap, or you know, a hurricane style thing where, you know, okay. So here, over here, we see an actual hole about the happened in the emulsion in the base, because the decomposition has not only taken away the picture, but even was so severe it ate into the base of the film. Again, we see, here's the whole one, where there's actually a crater in the film. So this is, if we made a splice here, we would lose these two frames, but there's enough dimensional stability to, on the sprocket size to actually print this with a hole in it. So we didn't even have to splice this, and the light comes plowing through the hole, but, we've saved those other two frames. This is the image to show what is washed off. Here's the before on the top, and we see this brown area here, and up in these sprockets, the perf area, and down here, this is the area affected by the decomposition. And then after the treatment, at the bottom, we see that there's D-min here in the perf area, and then our treatment has taken completely the emulsion off of the base, and you can see it. That's where it's clear, and the picture remains. The unaffected picture remains, which was the beauty of this treatment we came up with, which was pretty elementary. This is another some hardship cases that were just beyond stage four, and again, no one examined this. This didn't happen over a course of a couple of weeks. Had people been paying attention, this roll could have been salvaged. This is a roll that didn't make it. There are so few areas that potentially had picture left that we just declared it to be something, a curiosity piece, and attempted to save some frames, which we did, but we actually had to hack it apart. These are images of some of us that look worse than the octopus and the stick. I forgot to give you a disclaimer about that. You might want to hide your eyes. So this is interesting. We're all taught and think about and read about, the perils of splicing tape in when you get ready to put stuff into cold storage or any kind of storage. But in fact, here's an incident where the only frames left are those that were covered by splicing tape. We got the roll to look like this. The orange patina of the roll shows that after the treatment, the decomposition is alive and well and growing every day. Although it looks pretty happy there, it's really not. After 2 weeks of treating it and putting it in a new stock can, this was what happened. So we're thinking a roll that we'd like to think was chemically neutral and fixed is still very much alive and eating away at the tin in the stock can. These are the frames of this roll that were saved. And we see, obviously there's nothing, we don't have film of this roll. I think it's pretty cool, but Ray says, I've got lots of this stuff. So that's that. If we could go to the film now, and roll the film, and I'll start talking about this treatment, which was pretty cool and pretty easy. And the very first image is on the film, and this is mixed format film. Most of it's full frame, but for some reason this is Academy Aperture, so bear with us here. This is 1946 Warsaw, and this is the beginning image of roll 2118, which we would now have been incinerated had we not been able to figure out what to do. The roll consists of a mishmash of locations, winding up in Manchuria, and then ultimately the recent scenes from like 2 weeks ago, where we're in the middle of doing the Japan footage from 1935 that Sam just sold to the Japanese government from his collection. So this is roll 2118. Happily, the people who were very, very instrumental in us coming up with ways to think this through and develop the system are in the audience right now, and I wanted to especially mention and credit Bucky Grimm, on whose website, when we were researching this, we discovered a paper by Richard Kingsley written. Here comes the scene with the little kids, the before and after, and you'll see the curtains in and curtains out effect happening on the sides as the decomposition eats into the film and were able to get rid of it. So Richard Kingsley writes this paper about how the people at the National Archives in Washington dealt with not the burned footage from the Suitland nitrate fire, but the films that were water damaged only, and the program that they incorporated to save those water damaged films. And based on that, I got to thinking about a treatment that would be water based, and then you don't read very far in anything having to do with nitrate film, and you're alerted that, if you subject a nitrate film to water, the emulsion is going to roll off. So that would be a problem. And so we consulted with our Kodak business and technology partners for 30 years. Two of those folks are here, Rich Carlson and John Johnston, and their associate, Scott Stevens, all worked to get us in touch with a scientist, or a level of scientist that's not allowed to talk to the public, at Eastman Kodak, Tulsi Ram. And in about 20 minutes, he came up with a way to quantify the pH, to measure the pH of the film, and then was able to tell us a point after which the film would be endangered, if we subjected it to water, or it would be okay. And so we were then able to see if a particular roll was going to withstand the treatment, or we would lose the roll completely in the act of treating it. So I owe a lot of gratitude to that group of people, and Bucky, of course, and the Kodak folks are here, and we thank you very much. It's a water based treatment, and I wish I could say that it was a permanent fix to things, but. I think it's looking like it's only if you have coal storage available that you can really say the roll is chemically neutral, all decomposition is stopped, and it will for in perpetuity be available for long term. But certainly enough to preserve it to a piece of polyester, dupe negative. All these images are first generation answer prints from 35 millimeter camera nitrate, except for the first couple scenes. These are now full frame negatives. We're now in Austria, right, in a copper wire factory, where we were. So although it's a safety print that we're looking at, the luminosity of the nitrate just comes shining through to us. It's very exciting images, wonderful representation of very deep blacks and shimmering whites. And the Julian Bryan camera scratch, which is on about every sixth or seventh roll. Well, at least when he was here. This scratch defied fixing because it's being an emulsion scratch, our only resource was to rewash it and anneal or make little mounds of emulsion by rewashing it around the scratch so that the light can refract through those mounds and not be stopped and make this image on the film. And in this case, the scratch was so wide that the imagery, it just didn't work. It has to be a little bit more, a little bit less wide. I would have to defer to my friends here. I think so. He was hired to do Marshall film.
He did some European recovery program work.
Yeah. We have evidence of how he worked here. He was a courageous soul. Not having a lighting kit, not having assistance to lug lights in light areas didn't stop him from going into cathedrals and places where he had no right to get an exposure at all, and just undercranking the camera. If scenes then would speed up motion and bothered people, they'd be step printed to re-add the frames. In video transfer, in making video masters, of course, it's a very easy thing just to run the thing down at 12 frames per second. Most of the footage, even though it's silent, is shot at 24. But he was a courageous cinematographer and didn't let little technical difficulties like no light stop him. Okay, so now we're in Manchuria. Cool. The first time we screened this at the Holocaust Museum, people kind of looked around and said, what does this have to do with pre-war Eastern Europe? So this is Manchuria, and this was for a travelogue he did there. And this is roll 2511. So why is it on here?
Because you love it.
Oh, that's yeah.
We want it to go to the Japan collection.
While we were working on this, you know, we started focusing on the Germany and Poland, and so then someone gave us Audrey Kupferberg's appraisal of the collection, and we see all this long list of countries. And we're thinking, you know, the stuff couldn't possibly be as good as Poland and Germany, you know, that he shot in Bolivia or Argentina. But in fact, the same spirit, the same humanitarian feel to the footage exists it seems to now, we now know about Japan, in all the places he visited and filmed. It's quite a body of work.
Mid-30s. Looks beautiful, Russ.
Okay, we're now in Japan in 1936, right? 36. No, yes, yes.
I don't do Japan.
Okay.
Should be 1935.
35, okay. And this is, the previous images were from a first, you know, a black and white answer print on projection prints, black and white print stock, polyester. This is because of time restraints and being involved in a one-step preservation procedure. This is, we're actually screening a fine grain master, which is why the contrast looks a little different.
1935?
Yes, 35.
For his film lectures.
These were speculative in nature, right? I mean, no one had ordered a lecture on Japan. So he would speculate, is this right, Sam? He would speculatively go and make them and then sell them. The marvelous thing about the, and why these, in my mind, programs were so important is he would go back after a certain amount of time had passed to the same locations, the same families, the same issues, and update the film. He would cleverly create a whole nother film, but there would be just update portions of it. And, of course, the second film meant nothing without the first film, and this was a pretty cool business model.
Someone tell us medically what was going on with the glasses?
UV, I think it has to do with, you know, protection for jaundice. You know, it's UV rays, something like that. Yeah, but
The whole objective of this period, 1935, was simply to bring back enough material to end up with an 80, 90-minute travel lecture,
okay,
which is what you saw the reviews of other things. No idea to make any kind of shortcuts.
Yeah, we're now at the Dotson factory. I think my family got that one. So here's an example of Julian's his production methods. I mean, a lot of this was staged, although if you didn't see how, you know, the beginning of the shots and the camera operator's direction to start action, you wouldn't know it. Sam?
Step two did not happen with these films. It was only the step one you're describing with his live voice in a university setting showing the picture.
Are there any recordings of his speeches? Of his talk?
Typescripts.
Almost no recordings.
Yes.
And apparently he got permission from the Japanese military to travel with them and got sequences like this, but it's also what got him all the way up into Manchuria, or so-called Manchukuo.
Yeah, we presume that was staged. Or we hope it was staged. Thank you very much.